Okay, so second half of the evening, we move on to the next meditation, which is the Mudita Bhavana, the third in the series of meditations called the Brahma Viharas, or the Illimitables, the Aparimanas, the mental states or the emotions which have no limit to how much you can develop them. Perhaps we can also think of it the other way around as well. There's no limit to how little you can develop them. Yeah. So, you know, tiny, tiny little amount is really good. It doesn't have to be massive, you know. So, Mudita Bhavana, the third one. So, as I said a couple of weeks ago, or as I think probably Chandana said, we begin with the Metta Bhavana. Lots and lots of Metta Bhavana. And then, when metta meets suffering, it becomes karuna. So when you're doing the karuna bhavana, you don't have to do anything special, apart from the six stages that Chandana mentioned earlier. You just bring to mind people who are suffering, or when you think of, say, your friend in the third stage of the karuna bhavana, you just reflect on the fact that they do in fact suffer in some ways. And you'll know that because they're your friend. You'll know that they suffer in some ways. And then when you think of the neutral person, well, then you have to use your imagination because you don't know them. But you can be pretty sure, them being human, they will suffer in various ways. And then the enemy and so on. So you're just doing the metta bhavana, but you're just reflecting on the fact of their own suffering. So that's the karuna bhavana. So then, after that, then we move on to the Mudita Bhavana. So that's one I'm going to introduce now. Mudita means, usually it's translated as sympathetic joy. So when metta meets happiness, meets success, meets freedom, then metta becomes mudita. So it's your feelings of happiness in other people's happiness and good fortune. Yeah. Now, last week, I think, as far as I remember, I said it's going to be easier next week because we've come on to Mudita Bhavana, but that was a very, very loose thing to say because it's not easier, actually. There are problems that we'll find, probably, as we do the Mudita, aren't there, Linda? Yeah, just to do with the Mudita Bhavana. So, the usual translation is sympathetic joy, but another translation is gladness. Good word, gladness. You know, often you'll be writing emails or something and someone say, I'm getting on really well at the moment, and you'll write back, I'm glad to hear. Yeah, glad. So gladness is the sense of happiness at other people's good fortune, or at least mudita is. So sympathetic joy or happiness. So the challenge here, we've all heard about the challenges to do with the karuna bhavana, but the challenge with mudita is obvious, I think. Yeah? Is it not? To really rejoice and be happy at other people's good fortune, success, happiness. Difficult. Yeah? Especially when you're feeling a bit low. When you have not succeeded at something. When someone else is obviously doing better than you at something. It's very hard to really rejoice in that. Other emotions come into play. So, yeah.
I've just got a quote that might see this. It was Mark Twain who came up with this. He said, every time one of my friends succeeds, a part of me dies.
Okay, so for Helen's benefit, Kaz just said, he just reminded me of a Mark Twain quote, every time a friend of mine succeeds, a part of me dies. Okay, so we're going to try and develop the opposite. So I'm not going to give a talk or anything. Gave a talk last week. One's enough, isn't it, for the time being. Don't need any more talks at the moment. We're going to do things today to try and get into what it actually is. So the first thing I want you to do is to break into pairs. Choose someone to work with. It might be the person next to you, or you might want to go across the room to specifically work with somebody. And I want you to try to identify someone who is doing really well at the moment, who's very, very fortunate, who's happy, who's getting on with their life very, very positively. Yeah. Or it doesn't have to be all of those three elements, because that's a lot, isn't it? But it could be one of those elements. It could be someone you know. It could be a friend of yours. Sometimes the second stage of the mudisabhavana is to find a boon companion. It's a bit of an old-fashioned word, isn't it? Boon. B-O-O-N. Does anybody know what boon means?
A boon is like an extra, a gift.
Yeah. So a boon companion is a friend of yours who's nearly always, if not always, happy. Positive, emotionally positive, getting on with things, always does things well, someone like that. You could think of someone like that, or you could just think of someone who's not a particular friend of yours, but you know who is very fortunate at the moment. Yeah. So I want you to break into pairs and try and identify someone like that in your life and talk about them to your partner, and then start talking about how you feel about that person's success and good fortune. Yeah, and you can be as honest or not as you want to be.
Yeah.
Okay, so off you go.
Okay, so how did you get on? Did you all manage to think of someone fortunate? Anybody not manage to think of anyone?
Way too.
Did you want to talk about your feelings about that person, very fortunate?
Yeah.
What kind of feelings did you have, dare you say?
Peevish.
Peevish. Peevish.
You know what that means? So sweet. My friend was really successful.
Yeah, yeah. That's very honest, but many of us feel those things but don't even admit it to ourselves. There's always a sense of...
I don't know about you.
Yeah, sometimes there's a subtle sense of satisfaction, isn't there, when a friend of ours has done very well, comes a cropper. There's this, that sense of... Yeah, we might not even admit it to ourselves. Any other feelings?
I found that my feelings were painful or contingent upon how feelings in this. The feeling really good about myself, be happy. Feeling really bad about myself or myself and people to fail.
Yes. Yeah, of course. Yeah. That's a very good insight as well. So I want to stress the importance of the first stage of the mudisabhavana, self-metta. Because there are times in our life, aren't there, where we feel quite low, we maybe haven't succeeded at something we want to succeed at, we're not doing very well in our life, or at least we feel we're not doing very well, so we have a kind of low self-esteem, we feel low, we don't feel great about ourselves, and then it's quite difficult to bear, isn't it, when someone else near us is doing really, really well. But for obvious human reasons, it's very difficult to bear that and feel happy in their happiness. So again, the instruction is always, if you feel like that, then come back to self-metta. So here's a question for you. Do you think it's possible for someone with very little talent, who's not good looking and who is poor, to be happy?
Yeah.
Here I am,
hey. It's possible,
this, but yeah, take it from me.
So you don't need talent, you don't need to be good looking, you don't need loads of money to be happy. But it's always worth remembering that. So what you really do need is a sense of self-metta and the feelings of self-worth. So when you do feel intimidated, when you feel unhappy at other people's obvious good fortune, success and happiness, if you cannot rejoice in that fortune and happiness, usually what it means is you need to do some metta, especially towards yourself, you need to do some metta. Because if you have got self-metta, it's much easier to feel happy in other people's happiness. And of course it's one of those self-contradictory things, that if we don't feel happy in other people's happiness, we're hurting ourselves. We're not hurting them. They're going to be happy anyway. But it rebounds back upon ourselves and we feel even more unhappy. So it's really worth trying to develop that sense of happiness in other people's happiness, because it just makes us happier. So The far enemy of mudita is obvious, isn't it?
Envy.
Envy? Yeah. Jealousy. Resentment. In their good fortune, all those things. They're the far enemy. They're basically, the far enemy is not being happy that someone else is happy. Yeah. The near enemy. Yeah? The near enemy. See, you're familiar with this far enemy and near enemy business. So, what's the near enemy? Okay, I'm going to give you a clue, and then I'm going to set you off in groups to try and sort this one out, what the near enemy is. The near enemy as metta is pema. And pema is a kind of attachment to somebody. It's sometimes called sticky love or sticky affection. It's the kind of love you have for someone when you only really like them, you only really love them because they love you. Yeah, it's a kind of wanting something from them. So the difference between pema and metta is that pema, there's some self-interest in the relationship. You want something from that person. You're getting it, so you're happy. When they begin to withdraw that from you, when they decide they don't want to keep giving you that, then you're no longer really friends with them. Yeah, so that's pema. It's very conditional on what you get from them. Metta is disinterested. There's no self-interest involved in metta. You just wish the person goodwill because you want them to be well, not because of what you get out of their wellness. Yeah? So the difference between the real thing, the positive emotion, and the near enemy is that the near enemy has some self-interest in it. It's not only interested in the other person. So, with that little clue, I want you to break into groups of 4 and 5 to talk about, try and figure out what the near enemy of the Buddhists are.
Did you read the expression, when done in Buddhist? Did you read that?
Yeah.
Yes,
that's
that's what we're trying not to do.
Okay, so what did you come up with? Difficult to figure it out, isn't it?
Yes, I'm going to be able to
figure it out. Group couldn't come up with anything, is that right?
Well, it could, it just didn't make any sense.
Didn't make any sense. We want something that makes sense. Did anybody else come up with? It's difficult. I was thinking about it on the train from London this morning. Yeah? No?
No, we couldn't make any sense.
No, you couldn't? Okay.
I don't think she asked.
So, sycophancy came up in our group.
Sycophancy?
No, it's not right.
No? Okay. Okay. I'm going to hand you over to someone who's got it in one.
I don't know what you call it, but reflective glory. So, say my daughter got a first degree. Mm. Isn't she, marvellous?
Yeah, exactly. So, your relationship with someone, if someone's really successful, it kind of reflects on you. You know, you get hangers-on to celebrities, don't you? Mm. I'm a friend of such and such a person. Yeah. And it kind of reflects back on you. Mm. Or the example that Chandler was given in our team meeting earlier was if you were mentoring someone, if you were a mentor to someone and they did really well, you'd start thinking, you wouldn't be only happy that they're doing well, but you'd be happy the fact that you were the person who helped them to do well.
Yeah.
So that seems to be, traditionally it's called vicarious pleasure. Mm-hmm. And we were wondering in the team meeting what vicarious meant. We didn't. Well, you knew, didn't you? It was. You thought.
Yeah.
You knew anyway.
One step removed, or indirect or something.
Yeah, an indirect glory from someone else's. Yeah. Okay. And you thought there might be more than one.
Yeah, I couldn't think of it.
Okay. So it's worth remembering that the near enemies of these positive emotions are always something like the positive emotion, but they've got some self-interest in. So, had enough of talking now. We're going to do the first two stages of the Ruby Siddhartha. It's self-metta, leading into thinking of the fortunate person and letting metta towards them.